Welcome to the Lobot Lounge, the gathering place for the Gentleman Nerds. The Gentleman Nerds are three entertainment aficionados who know each other through various media endeavors, getting together to talk about all things nerdy, mostly in the vein of film, television, toys, and popular culture. Many topics are discussed, so please be warned. There are the potential for many spoilers. If you like what you hear, you can listen to past shows on iTunes or on our website, thegentlemannerds.com. And now, enjoy the show.
You really don't know much about Halloween. You thought no further than the strange custom of having your children wear masks and go out begging for candy. It was the start of the year in our old Celtic lands, and we'd be waiting in our houses of wattles and clay. The barriers would be down, you see, between the real and the unreal, and the dead might be looking in to sit by our fires of turf. Halloween, the festival of Samhain. The last great one took place 3,000 years ago when the hills ran red with the blood of animals and children. And horror movies. Yes, it was part of our world, our craft. It's not so different now. It's time again. In the end, we don't decide these things. The Gentlemen Nerds do. They're in alignment, and it's time again. Here, gathered at our table to discuss Halloween, Halloween movies, and all things that go bump in the night, are Mark Finn.
Michael, it is time.
Aaron DiOrive.
Cthulhu Fatagan.
The world is going to change tonight. I'm glad you'll be able to listen to it. I'm Joseph Futinos, your host and emotional touchstone for this, our Halloween episode of The Gentlemen Nerds. Welcome.
Thank you for that indulgence. I do love Connell Cochran's speech from Halloween 3. It makes me smile. It just makes me smile. Dan O'Leary is amazing.
Is that the season of the witch?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
It's much maligned
and unfairly so.
Exactly. But you know what? I mean, here's the thing. I think it's maligned because it's not really part of the Halloween series.
Yeah.
But it is, if somebody had made this movie and just called it Season of the Witch and had it have nothing to do with the Halloween franchise, I think everyone would have been fine with it. They would have been, wow, what a great movie.
Yeah, totally. It's growing, though. Every year, there's always articles written by film experts, quote-unquote, historians that say, you know what, let's give this a second look because it really is a good movie. It's a freaking scary movie, and it's bizarre, and it's out there, but it's worth another look. And it's unfairly maligned because everyone wanted to see Michael Myers again, and because it was John Carpenter, it was Halloween 3, surely it was going to be a continuation. But Halloween, and we've talked about this before, Carpenter's original idea was to do a different, completely different movie anthology style every October and call it Halloween, blah, 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 blah. You know, Halloween, The Night He Came Home, Halloween, Season of the Witch, Halloween, you know, whatever. But yeah, it just didn't work out. So,
yeah.
Definitely worth a look. But we're talking about movies today, ladies and gentlemen, and we've decided, the nerds have got together and said, you know, we've done Halloween shows before. We've talked about all kinds of horror flicks and our favorites and blah, blah, blah. We thought we'd maybe dig a little deep and maybe introduce you guys to movies you may not have heard of. And maybe some of you have. I'm sure there's some deep cuts out there that you guys are really familiar with because, you know, we got some nerdy listeners. But we thought we'd share some of our favorites that may not be on the top 10 of horror movies on lists that you may see online. So in the interest of moving things along, if you guys don't mind, I think we could do it round robin style. Are you guys good with that?
Absolutely.
Sure.
All right. Okay. Well, I'm going to launch this puppy out with something that it's a film that I just really enjoy. I've loved this movie for years, and I'm surprised how many people don't know about it. It's from 1979, and it's a little film called Tourist Trap. And Tourist Trap is a horror movie starring Chuck Connors. Yes, the rifleman himself, Chuck Connors. Tanya Roberts also appears in it. But it's a very bizarre melding of, say, Texas Chainsaw Massacre and supernatural powers, and Bob Burns, who did the art direction for the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre and The Hills Have Eyes, does the art direction for this. So it's pretty creepy. There's living mannequins and telekinesis and cross-dressing and psycho elements with a twin brother who may or may not be a twin brother. Chuck Connors plays Mr. Slauson, who owns this abandoned roadside tourist trap, Slauson's Lost Oasis. And it's very creepy because it's filled with all these mannequins, and these mannequins, something's a little off with them. It's hard to describe without spoiling too much of it, but suffice to say, Chuck Connors deserves an award for his performance in this. He's amazing. He comes into the scene and you can't keep your eyes off of him. He's the name in this, obviously. But if you like, or you don't like, living dolls or mannequins that tend to open their mouth, scream, sing, or look at you, this might be
Who doesn't?
Right. This might be the Halloween chill you need. I advise you to turn your lights off, turn your sound up, listen to it, and open mind, folks. Open mind. You know, we all have hobbies, and Slauson has several. you know, it's a unique film. It was Charles Band is the guy who produced this back in the day. Yeah. And it's it's really hard to describe again, but it was one of these films that came out and left, and people didn't really know much about it. It shows up on late night TV. Here's the thing: it's PG. It's a PG horror film, so don't expect nudity and gore. It's not. It's creepy. It is so creepy, but it all makes sense. People walk out of that movie going, "What the hell happened?" But if you think about it, where the happenings begin and end, all end and begin with Slauson. And if you can keep that in your mind, then you got this. It's okay. Have either of you seen Tourist Trap?
I have not. No.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Time-honored tradition at the Gentleman Nerds, anytime you stump one of us, we have to drink. So coffee.
The film was not, it was only, I say the budget was about $800,000. So it wasn't like a huge budgeted film, but that helps. It's filmed with, darkness being darkness, which I love in horror movies. And there's no blue lights. It's like literally when they're in the dark, it's the dark. There's some unique special effects in it. And again, Bob Burns' mannequins will have you sleeping with the lights on. I suspect. Yeah. Tourist Trap. Highly recommended.
What's funny, you talk about the blue. I think that's an affectation. It's gone now. I think horror movies are now back to when it's dark, it's just darkness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for a while there, you're right. Everything was put through a blue filter. And not just horror movies, by the way, action movies, anytime they wanted mood, they would just slap a blue filter on it. And I'm glad to see that they're going away from that, where it's just, natural lighting, natural color. And when it's black, it's just dark and you can barely see figures moving around. But speaking of low budget, let me jump in with one of my choices.
Yeah.
All of my movies during this podcast, by the way, will be either adaptations of Lovecraft stories or Lovecraftian in feel, just because that's in the mode that I'm in, and so that's what I've been thinking about. But a low budget, what I think is a low budget gem, it's a German film, an adaptation of The Color Out of Space. The German title was called Die Farbe, I think I'm saying that correctly. And this movie really gets it right. I've seen many different adaptations of The Color Out of Space, Die Monster Die, and a bunch of other ones, The Curse. But my gosh, the love and the care that goes into this movie, it was made in 2010. Like I said, it's a German film. Let's see, who was the director? The director was
somebody German.
No, actually, well, maybe Huan Vu. That's Huan and last name Vu, V-U. I guess that's German. He wrote also the screenplay, of course, based on the H.P. Lovecraft story. But the thing I love that this movie does, it's black and white. Let me warn you right up front. Black and white. Oh, he was born in Vietnam. Vietnamese. He's a Vietnamese filmmaker making a German movie. I love it.
That's cool.
And the conceit, the wonderful affectation this movie does is the only color in the entire movie is the actual color out of space. And it's indigo. It's a sickly purplish indigo that glows. And that's it. I mean, everybody ran around black and white. And then suddenly you see that purple color. They all turn and they walk into the room and there's this thing glowing purple. It's just so effective. It's beautiful. It's very well done. It's a little slow paced because the story itself is just really these people kind of freaking out because their town is their community is being sickened and poisoned by this thing from outer space. But it's so well done. Again, it was made in 2010. You might find it on the original Defarb, F-A-R-B-E. Also, then now it's been, I think it's been retitled as The Color Out of Space. I'm not sure where it's streaming. I think it's on Amazon. I think you can rent it on Amazon, but it might even be available on Netflix. But definitely look for it, folks, if you are a Lovecraft fan, if you are a fan of the story, or if you're just a fan of a movie that's about the slow decay, the slow corruption of people and a community and people's mental states, which is what the story is about. you will love this movie. Wow, nice. I highly recommend it.
Excellent.
Very nice. Yeah. Well, I'm gonna kind of split both hairs, and since we're doing Halloween, and these are forgotten horrors, I am going to throw a deep cut out there, a real deep cut. Don Coscarelli. We know him, we love him. He's best known for Phantasm, but also now Bubba Hotep, right? Yeah. And of course, the Beastmaster. Well, he got his start with a movie called Kenny and Company. Mm. And Kenny and Company, I'm recommending this to all of our listeners and loungers who are fans of Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is a slice of life style movie that is set in the 70s. It was made in 76. Mm-hmm. And it's got a very Spielbergian suburbs kind of feel. All the kids ride skateboards and play tricks on each other. All the parents are a little wacky, you know. But it's the 4 days leading up to Halloween.
Oh, wow. And
it's about how important that time is in a kid's life. And so it's a fascinating kind of a slice of life thing. But what's cool about it is, you know, the thing had a micro budget. You know, Coscarelli used his family and their house and everything that that they could. I mean, if you worked on this movie, you did everything. You moved stuff, you built things. He had actors would push the wheelchair around so that he could get his dolly shots, you know, that kind of stuff. It was
nice.
A real hands-on.
By the way, I love that the three of us opened with three low budget, very low micro budget movies. I think that's awesome.
Well, I would expect no less from us. And I dare say, if you're listening to this podcast at this point, you probably would expect no less either.
Here's another one I've never seen, fellas. I've never seen this movie.
Kenny and Company. Yeah, it got a very limited release and then was parked on HBO, you know, and which is where I saw it.
Yeah.
It's important if you love Phantasm, this movie is sort of like the proto, it's the progenitor. Okay. Yeah. Michael Baldwin, the kid from Phantasm,
Reggie Bannister as well.
Yes. Coscarelli found him on this movie, you know, and they began working together. Half the cast and crew ended up working on Phantasm with him. You know, this movie taught him how to be creative and shoot on a budget. But most importantly, the thing about this is it's a very watchable movie. You know, it wears its 70s-ness on its sleeve.
Yeah.
But it's also the kind of movie that Spielberg was trying to do in the 80s. When he was doing Poltergeist and E.T. and all that kind of stuff, you know, and it's certainly the kind of thing that 8mm and Stranger Things have all sort of to try and gone back and try to recapture that kind of, you know, where the den had wood paneling and, so it's a really good movie. It's not particularly scary, although there are a couple of scenes with some genuine jump scares and some real fun Halloween shenanigans, the kind we all remember doing, you know, like building the dummy and putting it in the street and going to the neighbor's haunted house. And there's a wonderful trick or treat sequence that is just brilliant, that really showcases like everything that's both heartbreaking and also exhilarating about trick or treating and getting candy and making your own costumes. You'll honestly, if you haven't seen it, and you'll love it. I know you two will love it.
No, nice. I've seen it. I've seen it. And it always struck me as, and I, mind you, it's not one of my favorites, but when I saw it, and again, on HBO, as you described, it's exactly where I saw it.
You saw it.
Yes. But it's like A Christmas Story for Halloween.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
You know,
that's a great way to describe that.
Yes. There you go.
Yes.
Very good.
You'll have to find it. You'll have to seek it out. But I don't think you'll mind the hunt, and it actually ends up being a very good thing in the end.
And a lot of those movies like that, like these super low budget, sometimes they do end up on YouTube. You can just look them up on YouTube, and you know, if either no one's bothered to protect the copyright or whatever it is, they just put it up on YouTube. But no, this again, I'm writing down. Here's another movie that I need to watch. Excellent.
All right. Let's see if this one will grab ya. You guys all know him. You all love him. But maybe you've never seen his films. You've heard the name. Maybe you've seen his images, ladies and gentlemen. I'm talking about the infamous Zé do Caixão, Coffin Joe, from Brazil.
Okay.
Coffin Joe. the actor himself. What's his name? The character of Coffin Joe starred in a series of films. This Night I Will Possess Your Corpse. This Night I Will Take Your Soul. It's a very bizarre, almost surreal, fever-like dream series of films about this character named Coffin Joe, who's looking for the perfect woman to give birth to a son. He wants to get the perfect woman has to give birth to his son. And his first film was called At Midnight, I'll Take Your Soul. And the sequel is the one I'm going to recommend called This Night, I Will Possess Your Corpse. This is from 1967, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay.
Javier Molina, his name is Molina, Jose Molina, the actor. And he created this whole mythology of this character. And he's like a celebrity, a national celebrity in Brazil for this series of horror flicks. The image is indelible. I know if you see a picture of Coffin Joe, you'll go, oh, yeah, that guy. He wears the top hat. He's the town undertaker, the series. He's the town undertaker. He's got long, really long nails and a beard. And he's got the top hat and a cloak. And in this movie, in This Night I Will Possess Your Corpse, he and his hunchback deformed minion, Bruno, they abduct six women from the village, and he submits them to creepy experiments, trying to find the future mother of his offspring to keep his bloodline alive. And it's borderline sexploitation. It's borderline gore. It's borderline – it's black and white. Warning, spoiler alert, black and white. Yeah. However, the sequence where he descends into hell is shot in color, and it is – surreal and dreamlike and certainly worth a look. If you've never experienced Coffin Joe or any Coffin Joe movies, this I can't recommend enough.
Yeah, and I have not. I in fact have never.
You, Aaron, you
I'm gonna get drunk on this podcast. I'm gonna get so drunk.
Oh my god. No, Aaron, you would love this film.
Okay.
I know you would, because it's right up your alley. You know, you like those old Mexican horror flicks, you know, This film is, because it builds on a mythology that each film kind of builds on. And by the time you finish this movie, you're like, I want to see more of Coffin Joe. I want to see what he's doing now. This guy, he keeps showing up, you know.
No.
Yeah, no, it's a very, very unique film, and just all the films in the series. But this Night I Will Possess Your Corpse is structured the best, in my opinion. It flows really well. It from beginning to end, you could pick this one up and not see the first one and go, okay, I know what's going on here, you know. And if you can watch it in the original language, I highly recommend it. I know it takes some reading, and which most people don't want to read during the movies, but you know, trust me, this is the way to go on this. He's compelling, and he's charismatic. He's interesting and fascinating, and he's nice. Creepy as hell. Coffin Joe, this Coffin night Joe? I will possess your corpse.
See, already I just the title alone. This night I will possess your corpse. Yeah, I mean, holy yeah, cow.
Yeah, what's
the hell of a title?
What's not to love about that?
Awesome. All right. God damn, look at all this shit I'm writing down. Okay. All right. So my next one, another Lovecraftian adaptation, this time of the Lovecraft story, The Case of Charles Dexter Ward. And the movie is called The Resurrected.
Yep.
Yep. I love this movie. 1991, directed by Dan O'Bannon, who wrote Alien.
And Return of the Living Dead.
And Return of the Living Dead, correct. He directed, he apparently also worked a little bit on the screenplay. The screenplay's by Brent Friedman, who later went on to write a bunch of animated television. He did episodes recently for Star Wars Rebels. He's done, did a whole bunch of episodes for Clone Wars. It just did a whole bunch of and video game work as well, Telltale Games and Tales from the Borderlands. Anyway, just a really, really talented guy. But this is Chris Sarandon, one of my favorite actors, because he also happens to be Jerry Dandridge in the wonderful movie Fright Night, which is one of my favorite all time vampire movies. Mm-hmm. But Chris Sarandon plays basically a resurrected sorcerer, an ancient sorcerer, who has discovered a way to make himself immortal, and the crew has to go and investigate what is going on, because he has gone off to some remote cabin that the family has apparently owned for centuries. The wife hires a private detective to go do that. That's our main character, the private detective, and he has to go and explore this weird remote cabin. And what he finds there, and again, talking about the moments of absolute darkness, which work, there's a sequence where basically the actors are wandering around in almost complete darkness. Mm-hmm. And there are all of these pits in the floor with things in them, creatures, you can hear them. And they're desperately trying to maneuver through this space without falling into the pits with one of these horrible things. And it's done pretty much, except with a couple of flashlights, in pitch black. And it's so effective. It is so incredibly effective. As these people are like, where are you? No, come here. Ah! And I think one of them kind of starts to fall in and they're grabbing onto him. And you never see the creatures. You just hear them. And that's enough. I'm a big proponent of you are more scared by what you don't see than you are by what you see. Less is definitely more in horror for me. And sound design is incredibly important to really get those hackles going and to just really make you shudder, because you, of course, imagine whatever horror is most important and terrifying to you, as that's what's in the bottom of that pit. And we're all going to imagine something different, a spider, an octopus, whatever it is. And it's incredibly effective. But yep, The Resurrected, directed by Dan O'Bannon, based on the story, The Case of Charles Dexter Ward. I highly recommend it. Chris Sarandon does a bravura performance on this. I mean, my God, that man can ham it up like no other actor.
No doubt.
He is at his hammiest in this movie. So, yep, highly recommend it.
And what's cool about that is that it, up until last year, it was not available on DVD. You had to bootleg it or get it from Great Britain or whatever. And it's now, I think Scream Factory finally re-released it. So
I think it's also available on Amazon. I saw it again. It was like a late night, and I don't even remember how long ago it was. We had cable at the time. We haven't had cable in almost 5 years, and it was on late night one night. And I was like, I want to watch this. And of course, my God, am I glad I did. And I was just like, holy cow, I've never heard of this movie.
We caught it on VHS back in the day when it first came out. I think when it first came to home video, it was one of those films that really just grabs you. And being familiar with the story and the other adaptation of this film, which is The Haunted Palace of Vincent Price, yep. that I enjoy a lot. But this was, oh my God, over the top horror. And the scene that Aaron describes in that cellar, in that dark, dark, horrible cellar, is worth the price of admission, folks.
Definitely. It is. Yeah. It is absolutely a chilling scene. Yeah. I mean, I remember just watching it going, oh my God, like what would I do if I were there?
Yeah. And you have no idea what those pits contain. And you don't want to know what those pits contain.
That's more to the point. You don't want to know what's down there.
And that's totally Lovecraftian, man. They nailed that, right?
Yep.
All right. Mr. Finn.
Well, I have this one is sort of Lovecraftian, but not really. And it's sort of scary, but not really. What it kind of fits for me is that space that Silence of the Lamb occupies.
Okay.
And it's one that got by a lot of people despite the initial buzz. But it's a short thing. Relatively speaking these days that you can get because HBO is, you know, available now all over the place. Mm-hmm. It's the first season of True Detective.
The first
season of True Detective is, and of course they didn't, when they were selling it, they sold it on the strength of Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson are two asshole cops that don't like each other in this new crime drama mm-hmm. from HBO. What they didn't tell you or anybody else was that the case that they're looking into has to do with Robert Chambers, The King in Yellow, and Carcosa.
Yeah.
And the story takes a really dark left turn, and then it takes a couple of more as the series ramps up towards its inevitable conclusion. And there is some chilling, creepy, suspenseful, horrific stuff in this movie. And it's perfect for scaredy cats because you can watch this thing and not, it does not have the kind of thing like It had, you know, it does not induce soul shaking terror, but they do a great job of letting you in on why these people in the story are so scared.
Yeah.
I'm
so glad you mentioned this, this series, Mark, because I have unmitigated love for the first season of True Detective. I remember Mark and I, as soon as it was over, as soon as the series was over, my phone rang. I picked it up. I see it's Mark Finn. And I go, I know exactly what this guy's going to talk to me about. And we proceeded to have an hour-long discussion about the series and our love for it. They knocked this one out of the park. It is so beautifully done with that dread, that just that the horror that lurks just under the surface. And not ordinary horror. Oh, look, a serial killer. No, supernatural things greater than we dare even try to understand are out there and they're influencing mankind. But it's done subtly with the touch of a master painter.
I'll tell you what I like best about this is one of the conceits in Lovecraft's world is that there is information that exists that clues people into the true nature of the universe. And when we stumble across it, usually in the form of a crumbling tome of blasphemous lore, right. It alters our brains. And if you read too much of it and try to take too much of it in, you'll go mad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're not wired for that.
We're not human. That's right. Yeah. We're not set up to know the secrets of the universe.
Right.
And in True Detective, the way that they get this across is by offering up the very real thing that there's always one case that will break cops, break paramedics, you know, there's always the thing where they basically go, you know what? I've had enough. And while that case and that amount of like senseless horror, right, is different for every cop, they do a wonderful job in this story of the series of giving you everything. In other words, it's the perfect example of what I'm imagining is way worse than anything they could have shown me. Yeah. And in this case, the information of how nihilistic and amoral and uncaring the universe is, mm-hmm. is in the form of a videotape, yeah. that depicts this crime being committed. And when Woody Harrelson watches it, after he finally gets a hold of it, it's a piece of evidence in the case. We see his reaction, and he has changed after that. Yeah. and so it's the kind, it's a wonderful, wonderful, way of, you know, for people who go, I just don't get Lovecraft. I don't get what this is about. You can hand them this and go, this is starter Lovecraft. Yeah. If you like this, you can keep going. And this is where it'll take you. But,
it's such a delight. And by the way, I didn't watch season two. They tried to put some, like, yeah. Something with a UFO or something, whatever. Yeah. I hear season three is going back to the formula of season one, and doing more of that existential dread.
We tried season two. We did. And it just, here's the secret, folks, chemistry. The chemistry in season one between the two main characters worked. Did so much to carry this. It made you release any doubt or suspension of disbelief that you, or disbelief you had. You suspended it because of these characters. You wanted to see more. You wanted them to take you on this journey. Two had zero of that. In my opinion,
that's too bad. And you know, and I actually like Colin Farrell. I like him. I think he's a compelling actor.
Yeah.
And I like who's the other guy? The
Vince Vaughn.
Yeah, I like Vince Vaughn. I like both of them. But yeah, you're absolutely correct, Joseph. Without that spark, without that connection between those two main characters, I can imagine that it would be really hard to have a successful season.
Well, I'll tell you what's ironic about this is before we started this podcast, we were all talking about Halloween 3. Mm-hmm. And then once we get started, we were discussing the fact that they wanted to do a different thing for Halloween each time. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't let them. And we were just talking about how cool that would have been. Well, they did do that for this.
I know.
And we were like, no, this is bullshit. I want more of the other thing.
Yeah. But I want it to be good. I still want it to be good. I mean,
The concept is right.
It was the second season was a crime drama without all the weird stuff, and it had its own cool things in it, but it was not the cool things that drew us to the show to begin with, and that was sort of the problem.
Yeah.
That's a pity. I like it. I like it. Urban legends. I'm a fan of urban legends. I'm a fan of the idea that tales are told around a campfire or passed down generationally from father to son and brother to sister and guys saying, oh, you don't go in those woods because XYZ will be there. Case in point, the legend of the Cropsey maniac from upstate New York. Who's the Cropsey maniac? Well, we don't really know. It's an urban legend about someone who kidnapped children. Maybe he was a deformed doctor or a crazed judge. He stalks the woods with an axe, looking to exact his revenge. Maybe he's part of a prank gone wrong. But the story blurs after so many years. The point that is made is that there's something out there, and the name Cropsey is attached to it. Now, many of you think I'm going with The Burning here in a second, because The Burning from 1981 actually took the story of the Cropsey maniac and made it real in a Friday the 13th kind of copycat. And said, oh, yeah, it's the Cropsey maniac. He's got a pair of garden shears. It was a horrible prank gone wrong. He's hideously deformed. Here's Tom Savini to make your stomach churn. Go.
Yes.
And it's delightful. It's a great film. I like The Burning a lot. But no, what I'm going to be talking about here is the other Cropsey movie that most people don't really know about. And it's called Madman.
I know it.
Okay. It's called Madman.
Now, there's also a movie called Cropsy, which I have seen. I thought that's where you were going, but
No.
Madman. All right.
Yeah, Madman is another 80s horror flick, and it is it's pretty schlocky, folks. I'm going lighter after the True Detective conversation that we just had. But Madman is made in 1982. And it's a very simple slasher flick, but the production, it going into production, was fraught with all kinds of interesting tales, which is what draws me to this. Okay, so it's based on the upstate New York urban legend of Cropsy. It was made for a low budget, $350,000 more or less. And it's Madman Mars is the name of the killer. They were going to go with the Cropsy Maniac, but then The Burning came out around that same time, and they thought, well, we don't want to do two Cropsies, so we'll change his name. In fact, they were going to call the movie Madman, The Legend Lives, but then I think it was a Frank Sinatra movie that came out that same year called Frank Sinatra, The Legend Lives, and they said, well, we can't do that, so they dropped The Legend Lives, and it just became Madman. Like Halloween before it, they wanted to get a name, they wanted to get one actor like Donald Pleasance for Halloween that they could use, Betsy Palmer for Friday the 13th. They wanted to get somebody. They didn't have the budget for it. So who they got was Galen Ross. Who the hell's Galen Ross, you say? Well, Galen Ross was the female lead in George Romero's Dawn of the Dead. She played Fran. So there's our female lead. There's our name. And everyone else is complete unknowns. What I like about Madman is the use of the darkness, but the idea of the urban legend that comes to life. And it's a deep woods, summer campy kind of stuff, of course. But Madman is different because we're talking about a horrible monster in the woods with an axe. And it's quintessential storybook time. It's stay out of the woods, there's a guy out there with an axe. In the story, Madman Mars is a farmer who murders his family and is lynched by a mob. And then he's back. He's in the woods with his broken neck and his axe and his hideous face, and he's going to kill you. It is thrilling. It is gory. It is borderline exploitation, but it's so much fun on a Halloween night. If you want to kick back with your friends and some adult beverages, I cannot recommend enough the story of Madman Mars or just Madman. They get ridiculous decapitation by car hood, but still you gotta go with it. It's called Madman, and big fun. And they even have it, he has his own theme song, so that's fun too. So yes.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. We don't like that.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to jump to a not direct Lovecraft adaptation, but certainly Lovecraftian in feel and subject matter. It's a movie that came out in 2016. It's called The Void. Mm. Several things that I love about The Void. First, about just its production. It was actually crowdfunded on Indiegogo. They raised almost $83,000. And again, this is low budget, folks, low budget movie. But what they managed to do with the budget that they have is pretty, pretty amazing, pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. It hardly made a splash when it was actually released, has started to develop a bit of a cult following now that it's available on streaming. And I believe Void is available both on Amazon and I think also on Netflix. But it's a wonderful, wonderful film. Written and directed by Stephen Kostansky and Jeremy Gillespie. Mm-hmm. It is basically a sheriff has to go investigate all the weird, wacky things that are happening at a local hospital in some little remote area. And the hospital is being assailed by a group of cultists.
Ooh.
And these cultists just so happen to have chosen the hospital as the site to open up a portal into another dimension where Lovecraftian horrors have started to spill through.
Oh, Lordy. Sure.
And it is, again, it's hard to describe this movie. It starts out kind of like, okay, it's going to be a movie about people running from a cult. I get it. And then no, then suddenly one of them gets possessed. One of the people hiding in the hospital gets possessed by one of these creatures and starts sprouting tentacles, and it becomes something more like a Stuart Gordon film. It's amazing. This movie goes all over the place. At one point, the sheriff actually goes over to the other dimension and is wandering around in this Hellraiser-esque kind of landscape with weird bloated creatures and spider-like things. And I mean, again, low budget. Low budget movie and all practical effects.
Nice.
And it is a marvel to behold. I wish that I could do as much with that budget as these people have managed to do. And I love that it's not based on any Lovecraft story, but it is undoubtedly Lovecraftian. It covers a lot of the same territory. Yes, about things from other worlds that are constantly have their baleful eye on us and are just waiting for the opportunity to come through and devour everything that they can possibly devour. So I just think it's a wonderful and one a little trivia that I love about this too. One of the filmmakers was actually working at Pinewood Studios on a floor below where Guillermo del Toro was working on the unfinished film at the Mountains of Madness. and I just think it's just all the connections. I mean, these people are obviously Lovecraft fans. And I'm sure they like me and many others would have loved to have seen Guillermo actually make at the Mountains of Madness. But it's wonderful. It was crowdfunded. And this is another thing that I think is exciting today, where you can get young filmmakers, guys out there, young filmmakers that are listening to this, you can go out there, create some really cool project, write a great script that can be done on a reasonable budget, and then crowdfund it. Go to Indiegogo, go to Kickstarter, and get your movie made. Because nowadays, you can just put that movie up on Amazon. It doesn't take that much. To put a movie that you've made independently up on Amazon. Distribution has always been the killer for these indie films. Not anymore. Amazon now has become pretty much the distribution channel for every indie novels, indie comics, indie movies, whatever it is, you can find it on Amazon. And every now and then, Blythe and I will go through and here's a weird movie on Amazon. It's free. Let's check it out. And it's horrible. It's a guy, obviously, with his dad's camcorder running around with costumes that, like, look like they just were bought straight off the racks off Walmart. And they're horrible. They're horrible. But they're up there. Yeah, people can watch them. So, yep, The Void. Highly recommend it for Lovecraft fans. It is definitely a treat for the senses.
There you go. All right. Very
love
cool.
It. Love it.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, Mr. Finn.
We're gonna keep it creepy. because I'm feeling a little creepy. I have a strange one that I can't believe so many people have not seen this. I really can't. It kind of hurts my head to think about it. There was a movie that came out in 2002. It was actually directed by Bill Paxton. It was the first thing he directed.
Yeah.
And it is called Frailty.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's another one of these movies that, again, I would put it more on the suspense Silence of the Lambs side of things, except for the fact that, kind of like with True Detective, you don't really know what's going on in the movie until the very end. It does a very good job of hiding the twist and the reveal. It is a wonderful, wonderful suspense thriller about a serial killer with a religious bent to him. This axe murderer is literally decapitating people that he claims are possessed by the devil. They have demons inside of them, and only by opening up their heads can I get the demons out. You know, I mean, the fact that they die is a small price to pay for the ridding the world of a demon. I think you agree. Sure, it makes perfect sense when you say it like that. And so this whole thing is about it's a movie that kind of flashes back and forth between the present day and the past, which is the nebulous late 50s, early 60s. And it's just a fantastic film. It's streamable and buyable. It's not very expensive. If you like True Detective, or if you were encouraged by that and you haven't seen this, it's another McConaughey joint. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the first times he wasn't playing. Back in 2002, he was just charming and attractive. But everybody forgets that he was also in a Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie. Okay. He's got a dark side. And in this film, he really lets it out in a really cool way. But I'm telling you guys, if you see the ending coming, I'll be surprised, because I was watching it and I was riveted by it. And then when everything happens like it does, I was like, no way. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was great. Yep. If you were fooled by The Sixth Sense, you're probably going to be fooled by Frailty, and you will love this movie. Yeah.
By the way, written by local screenwriter Brent Hanley. It was one of his first projects. And what pretty much put him on the map. I met him at an Austin Film Festival. Really nice guy. Yeah. I'm not sure exactly what the story is, but I know that the screenplay somehow made it to Bill Paxton. He fell in love with it.
Yeah.
I think Matthew McConaughey also had read it, or maybe Matthew McConaughey read it first and then dragged Bill Paxton into it. I forget exactly. Brent actually told me the story, and I don't remember it now. Like Mark said, it's just a wonderful story that could either be all in the person's mind, mm-hmm. or it actually could really just be happening. There really are demons, or it's just we're watching a man's descent into madness.
And I like that you basically get to decide for yourself pretty early on what you think it is, you know.
Yep.
And Paxton's got a role in it. He plays the dad. McConaughey's in it, and the late great Powers Booth, who is wonderful in everything he's in. Frailty, ladies and gentlemen. If you haven't seen it, or if maybe you saw it a long time ago and sort of forgot about it, definitely put it in your Halloween queue. You will not be disappointed. It holds up and is just a fantastic movie.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's a fun flick, and it is, you know, it's dark and it's twisted, but yeah. It's one of those things that I saw it once. I saw it once and I thought, wow, that was great. Never saw it again. I never wanted to go, I'm going to pick up Frailty and watch that again. Because it does take some attention.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Speaking of Matthew McConaughey, I did not say this during True Detective, but I will say it now. I can watch that man smoke a cigarette and drink a beer in a room and tell the story for hours.
It's true.
He's compelling.
There's something absolutely magically compelling about that bitch. I just don't know what it is.
Yeah. He's got palpable, old fashioned movie Hollywood charisma.
Yes.
Yep. He's got that star quality that they used to ascribe to people like Cary Grant, mm-hmm. and John Garfield, and Burt Lancaster. He's eminently, like, he pulls focus in a room.
He can do comedy. He can play a hero. He can play an anti-hero. He can play a villain. Yeah. I mean, this guy is absolutely versatile it'll, you know, like Joseph said, just imminently watchable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, he just watching him light a cigarette.
Yeah.
Just the quiet,
no, I agree.
no dialogue of him lighting a cigarette in that interrogation room repeatedly. You watch him do it repeatedly during True Detective. Yeah. You want more. Yeah. I wanted to smoke with him. I was like, I will light a cigarette and smoke.
Come here, come here. I'm going to pull out some bongos for you. Please play these naked.
There's a joy to him.
No, he's great.
I'm going lighter. I'm going lighter, folks. We've gotten some pretty deep, but you know, it's Halloween. It's supposed to be fun. I will give you a fun film. I'll give you one that you may or may not know. And there are two, actually. It's a double feature. I'm cheating. It's a double feature by our good friend Frank Henenlotter, who you may know from Basket Case, the story about a young man named Dwayne and his deformed brother Belial, who he carries around in a wicker basket. Enough said about that. These two movies were sort of his follow-up to Frankenhooker, and I love them both. I just love them both. The first is of 1988, and it's called Brain Damage. And Brain Damage, it tells the story of a young man named Brian who has an unwitting symbiotic relationship with a leech-like brain-eating parasite named Elmer. And Elmer lives on his back and will occasionally inject a psychedelic hallucinogenic a drug into his brain that gives him these amazing feelings. In return, Brian must carry Elmer on his back out in the world where Elmer can attack people and eat their brains. That's nice. The deal. And nice. He gets addicted to this drug. He must have more. He must have more. And if he doesn't, he just do a cold turkey. It's just, you know, you watch the degenerative effects not having Elmer's juice in his brain can do to him. And you can figure out the rest. It goes from there. My two of my favorite aspects of this film, Hindenlotter, big horror fan, obviously, and he grew up watching horror host John Zacherle. Well, Zacherle is the voice of Elmer, which is brilliant. And it's so fun to hear his voice coming out of that little leech-like thing. You know, come on, my boy, you need some more of this, you know. You know, it's brilliant. It's very well done.
Nice.
Yeah. And it's, you know, he sings and he's it's very, very fun. It's a comedy horror film, but there is enough gore and nudity and B-movie fun to make this another drinking party extravaganza. Hey, double feature, folks. You wanted more Hindenlotter? You got it. I recommend from 1990, Frankenhooker. Yes, Frankenhooker.
Wow.
Which is really cutting the softcore porn close, but it's still here's my summation of Frankenhooker. When it was released and it had a hard time getting a rated R rating from the MPAA, Hindenlotter recalls a story where they got a call from the MPAA and the production secretary answered the phone and they said, "Congratulations, you are the first film to receive an S rating." And the assistant went, "S for sex?" And the MPAA went, "No, S for shit."
Wow.
Yes.
Jeez.
Frankenhooker tells the story of a young medical student, Jeffrey Franken, whose girlfriend, played by a penthouse pet, Patty Mullen, in a fat suit in the first part of the movie, but in the second part of the movie, she gets to be herself, who is killed in a horrible lawnmower accident, cut to pieces. And so he tries to bring her back to life, and he has her head. And he's going to put the rest of her body together. So the best thing he could think of is, I'm going to go get body parts from people who look good, attractive women. So he goes to New York and he starts killing prostitutes with exploding crack cocaine and taking their body parts back home so he could build his girlfriend's body back again. That's the plot of Frankenhooker. Yeah. So if you want a hilarious, outrageous, so terribly wrong kind of a film with cheesy special effects and a lot of gore and nudity, Frankenhooker. Highly recommended. Guess what? Zacherle appears here as well as a weather forecaster who's predicting the storm that's coming. And he even says, "And if you scientists out there need some lightning to bring your monster to life, tonight's the night."
God.
Wow.
Wonderful. Frankenhooker. And she wanders through the streets of New York after being brought to life because it's the girlfriend, but she's still got, you know, the body parts of the hooker. Where does the evil lie in the body parts of the mind, idle hands, the hands of Orlok, et cetera, et cetera? She wanders through the streets going, "What a date!"
Oh, my God.
Definitely not for the kiddies. Lock the kiddies away. Put them to bed. After they pass out from trick-or-treating and eating all the candy.
Sure.
Brain Damage, Frankenhooker. Your late night, let's drink and bring some friends over. And it's laughable. It's absolutely laughable, but it's certainly entertaining. My double feature.
Okay. All right. Well, my last one, another Lovecraftian-esque, but not based on a Lovecraft story. This one I saw just very recently. It is available on Netflix, but it is called The Ritual.
Mm.
Wonderful British horror film directed by David Bruckner, written by Joe Barton. And essentially, it's a group of friends who all met at a university are meeting to catch up and they're planning to go on some trip together. And so, like a hiking trip, they're going to go off to some remote forest and like Sweden or Switzerland or somewhere. And they've always talked about doing this. They think it would be just wonderfully fun. The King's Trail is where they're going to, in the Sarek National Park in northern Sweden. So the idea is, one of them, as they're getting ready to do this, one of the sort of the dark secret is that one of the friends was at a convenience store with another one of the really good friends, and there was a holdup. And the friend, he witnessed it, he saw it, and was so scared he didn't intervene. And he watched his friend get beaten to death by the people that were robbing the store. And so that's the darkness that haunts not only him, but this group of friends. They all know something's wrong. They didn't know that he didn't help, that he saw and didn't help. But they know something's wrong. They know something's not quite right with their buddy. So off they go into the woods to sort of find themselves and try to work through all this. And they encounter probably one of the most beautifully designed monsters that I have seen in 10 years. It is a thing. It is an ancient thing of the forest that has been around for centuries, clearly had been worshipped as some sort of god by the Swedish Vikings. And they are being pursued by this thing that somehow senses their fear, their self-loathing, and feeds on it. And also very much wants to feed on them as well. And it's just how they're trying to avoid this creature. Eventually they come across an old cult that left over, like basically Swedish hillbillies that still worship this thing. And it's just, it is amazing. Again, talk about suspense, dread. You see the creature. There's no doubt about it. You actually see the creature. But again, the design is so alien, so disturbing. It's made out of body parts, and yet still has this sort of vague elk-like, you know, deer-like kind of quality to it. Mm. And it moves in a disturbing way, and it looks disturbing. And it really is just such a fun and I say fun, meaning if you love to be, you know, completely creeped to death and see movies about horrible Scandinavian monsters. Mm-hmm. This is a movie for you guys. Yes. You know, cannot recommend it. Have you seen it, Mark?
I have not seen it, but it's on my list. It's on my to-do list.
You, Mark, you will love The Ritual. You must see this. Everything that you loved about True Detective, although again, the same level of subtlety isn't there, but the same feeling of, oh my God, we find ourselves in an absolutely uncaring universe, and one of these creatures is unleashed on us. Mm-hmm. Cool. And so they tie in a bunch of wonderful, my favorite legends, Scandinavian legends of the Jotun, and all kinds of other weird ancient pagan gods. And it's done so well. It's done so well.
Yeah. Okay. No, it really is. It's a really good film. My only, and this isn't a criticism of the film, it's just that I'm a fan of structure and rules, and the creature has rules. There are some things that you need to know. I'm not going to spoil it, but they do say it a few times in the film. And then towards the end, I get a little confused as to why XYZ didn't happen, or why this didn't occur, or what is he doing again, and how did he, what, okay, you know, it gets a little fuzzy at the end for me, but it's incredibly enjoyable. I think you know what I mean, Aaron, but it's incredibly enjoyable, and yeah, the creature is, it looks like a Gary Gygax kind of a thing, you know, where they piece together some, I know, we'll make an owlbear, you know, we'll stick these parts together.
It is a chimera. It is absolutely chimeric creature. Yeah. But an old-fashioned
bestiary.
But it's built from bot torsos and limbs and of its previous victims. And the way it walks around, I compare it more to something out of The Thing, out of John Carpenter's The Thing, which is this weird pastiche of like it's walking on hands, you know, instead of feet and that kind of thing. It's just such a wonderfully horrific creature.
Yeah, no, it really is. It really is. Mr. Finn, I believe you're going to close us out.
Well, we're going to close out with an oldie but a goodie. Okay. And what inspired me to go back and revisit this was that Netflix has recently dropped a series called The Haunting of Hill House.
Oh, my God. We're watching it right now.
And so for those of you who like it dialed back a little bit, but no less creepy, mm-hmm. I'm going to recommend a British film called The Haunting from 1963. Mm. This is another movie that a lot of people don't give a lot of stock to because there's no blood and no gore.
Is that the Robert Wise, the Robert Wise black and white one?
Yes. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, that's the one with Claire Bloom and Russ Tamblyn. Yeah.
The greatest sound design house movie ever. Talk
about sound design, folks. This is the movie that shows you how to use sound to absolutely terrify your audience.
Oh, yes. The film doesn't have a big budget, but what it does have was a gifted director, a talented set designer. They had a really nice camera and they had an amazing soundtrack. And these things are sufficient to scare the bejesus out of you.
Yep.
Do not watch the 1999 remake.
No,
you will say to me, but Mark, it's got Liam Neeson and Catherine Zeta-Jones and Owen Wilson. And I will say, I don't care if it's got the ghost of John Wayne. Don't watch it.
Yep.
The movie is ass. Now, the original one, there's a reason why it's a classic. There's a reason why it consistently shows up on top 10 lists, especially when you're talking about haunted house movies.
Yep.
Or technically proficient films. And I'm not taking anything away from the Netflix series because that's awesome too.
Have you watched the Netflix series, Mark?
I started and I haven't gotten far.
So. Yeah, we just finished the fifth episode last night, and it is fantastic. I cannot sing the praises of this series enough.
It is a 10-episode series based on Shirley Jackson's The Haunting of Hill House, which, of course, The Haunting is based on. Now, they made some changes, but that's okay. We like changes.
Yeah.
But sure. If you can, folks, watch the original The Haunting first. Just watch The Haunting.
Yes.
And do it in a dark room and turn your sound up. And I apologize for the sleep you're not going to have after that.
Yes. Totally. It's it's like I said, it's you heard everybody else here on the show flip out when I said the names. So if you haven't seen this movie or if you've been meaning to see it, bump it up on your list. Watch it this Halloween season and watch it before you get into the Netflix show. Because this is one of those movies that's really influential. And initially you might be 15 or 20 minutes in and go, I don't see what the big deal is. But as soon as the door starts shutting, that's when things get nutty. So be prepared to have your pants scared off. If you wear a belt, cinch it tight because this movie will scare the pants off of you if you do.
I've said many times on the show, by the way, guys, and you guys know this, I don't mind a reinterpretation of wonderful material like this, like The Haunting of Hill House, is one of my favorite horror novels by Shirley Jackson. As long as it's done well, as long as it gives us a new perspective or a new look into the world. And I think that the Netflix series does exactly that. Mike Flanagan is the director and creator of the series. Absolutely fantastic job. The man did Oculus. He did Hush. He did a bunch of other really Before I Wake, really other solid horror movies. Mm-hmm. And how he has reinterpreted the characters and the situation with Hill House. Again, I said we just finished the fifth episode. It's so superb. I really am a fan of this new interpretation. But agreed, the classic that's more true to the novel by Robert Wise, that is the one to watch first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Well, there you are, folks. You've got a list to go through, from the sublime to the ridiculous, to from the terrifying to the chuckle-inducing. You got gore, you've got fear, you've got creep, you've got it all, and all based on age appropriateness, of course. There are some things in there for the kiddos. You know what? I think your young adults would love Tourist Trap. There's nothing offensive about it. It's just creepy. And then, of course, we got the more adult stuff coming up. And then the scarier stuff You know, just go out and have fun. Enjoy horror. Watch horror movies. Make America strong, ladies and gentlemen. That's what we're saying here. Is make nice. America strong.
Yeah.
But The Gentlemen Nerds is a Cloak and Dagger production and was written by Aaron Diarive, Mark Finn, Ben Gibbs, and Joseph Fotinos, with additional material provided by Connell Cochran. Music composed and performed by the amazingly talented Ben Gibbs. Promotional material, logos, and the Gentlemen Nerds mascot was created by artistic goddess Michelle Fitzpatrick. The Lobot Lounge bouncer is Maximilian, and our special guest bartender was Coffin Joe. Thank you, Coffin. Our sound editor, mixer, and intentional producer is Ben Gibbs. Our executive producer and the man we all pray never gets superpower is Aaron Diarive. Hill House has stood for 100 years and may stand for 100 more, and whatever walks its halls walks alone. And Mark Farnesh is the man in the gorilla suit. Web hostings by Rustic Interactive. Technical assistance provided by Blythe Christopher Diarive. Please join us in the Lobot Lounge when next we open. And always remember to tip your bartenders and your waitstaff. We're all wishing you a very safe and happy Halloween, ladies and gentlemen. This is Joseph Fotinos reminding you all once again that Red Skull lives.
Show guys,
nice. Yeah, that was well done. That the flow of that went very well.
I thought so.
If yeah. if the three of us can't do a fucking Halloween show,
right?
Yeah. I know, right? Yeah, we don't need to be doing podcasts.
Yeah, we need to hang up our fangs right now. If we can.